And this 4th of July, we want to spend a few minutes on some of the lesser-known history of one of our founding fathers. Before we knew him as the towering figure Benjamin Franklin, he was known as Benny. His beloved little sister was Jenny. Of their relationship, historian Jill Lepore writes, "He loved no one longer. She loved no one better. He wrote more letters to her than anyone else." It's those letters that form the basis of Jill's Book of Ages, The Life and Opinions of Jane Franklin. It's a National Book Award finalist. It came out in paperback this week. So on this holiday, which celebrates the nation's birth, let's revisit a conversation Here and Now's Alex Ashlock had with Jill Lepore in the shadow of the Franklin Monument in the Granary Burial Ground in downtown Boston.
Benjamin and Jane Franklin he was the youngest boy, and she was the youngest girl in a family of 17 children by two wives of Josiah Franklin, who was a soap boiler and candle maker who had come to Boston from England. And of the 17 kids, they lived the longest, and for the last decades of their lives, they were the only two Franklin children still to survive, and they were closer than anyone else.
And they outlived, definitely in Jane's case, outlived their own children.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that's great about them is they really span the whole of the 18th century, which is this epic moment in Western history, certainly in American history. And you can follow over the course of their lives, everything happens to them. Most of them are things that Franklin is actually doing and responsible for, and that Jane is a witness to. So it's a fantastic story. And it's traceable the whole way through because Franklin wrote more letters to his sister Jane than he wrote to anyone else. I mean, here's this man who corresponded with kings, you know. But he remained deeply loyal to this sister and I think felt singularly responsible for her. It's this great untold story of American letters.
And many of his letters survive, but hardly really any of hers do. So how do you write a biography about somebody who you don't have a whole lot of information on or insight to, or does that come in part from his letters to her?
It's a tricky biographical task. I came to think about it. So what happened is they corresponded for 63 years, and the first three decades of that correspondence, all we have is Franklin's side of it. So, you know, you can kind of deduce what she had written in her letters, because he'll say, "In your last to me, you told me that our sister Mary had died. I'm so sorry to hear that." So, you know, you can sort of write in the negative space, but it's not the same as having her voice. And I thought about writing this project for years before I finally committed to it, because it's really, in some ways, an almost insurmountable evidentiary dilemma. But then I had this insight a ways through where I thought about binocular vision. You know, Franklin invented the bifocal and was one of the first people in the colonies to wear spectacles to do anything other than reading. You know, he had made these special glasses. And Jane had glasses, too. Franklin sent her spectacles. They had a brother who also wore glasses. But Franklin had this idea that, you know, you could use this single pair of glasses to see both what was far away and what was up close, to both make things bigger and make things smaller. And I came to sort of think about writing this biography in that way, that Franklin was so big and looming. I mean, he's such fascinating.
He's like the original American.
Yeah,
he's
he's funny, he's tender, he's brilliant, he's everything. You know, and Jane's life is full of such misery, and also it's just a humble, quiet, ordinary life. It was very hard to think about having them both on the same page, especially when this enormous amount of sources about his life and this little trickle. And so I really sort of started thinking about, what if I was wearing bifocals? You know, and every time I looked at her, I had to sort of amplify that. I had to magnify that a bit. And every time I looked at him, I had to make it a little bit smaller so that there could be a way to see both of them as equal before God, which is certainly how Jane understood their lives, as much as she admired her brother. She had this really quite radical 18th century notion of equality that is, if for no other reason, her worth is worth excavating.
And she's forever apologizing for the way she writes. When she writes letters to her brother, she doesn't really spell. She doesn't really spell, I guess, as he would. She's always apologizing for the quality of her writing.
She is abject before God. I mean, she has a kind of submission that's, I think, fundamentally different to a lot of modern subject, sort of like a modern subject. But there is also a real cheekiness to it. And Franklin writes to her once. He says, you know, please stop apologizing for your writing. You write better, in my opinion, than any American woman. I think you must be just fishing for commendation. You know, and he's totally got her number because she's full of pride in the same way that Franklin is full of pride. And he's forever, you know, sort of shuffling around, pretending to be humble. And Franklin is just the most prideful, vain person. And he will admit that. He's like, I have every kind of use for vanity. Vanity's a very useful thing.
Is there one letter that Jane wrote that you would want to mention or people or would want people to think about, listeners to think about?
The letter that I love above all is one she wrote in 1786 when she was living in the North End in this little house that her brother had given to her. She had just been reading this book about providence, you know, the idea that everything that happens is fated by God, which had been the source of great comfort to her, the notion of providence all her life. That if her children died, it was fated by God for some good that she could not see. And she had really struggled with that notion, especially during the Revolution. One of her sons died soon after the Battle of Bunker Hill, and she wasn't sure that God had intended this, and she began to kind of question her faith. But she read this book about providence in which Richard Price, this political radical who was very influential in the colonies, talked about that although it takes 300,000 acorns to make an elm tree, God had meant for that to be. But that didn't mean we couldn't grieve all the other trees that did not find soil. And she copied out a passage from this book as she was reading it in a letter to her brother. And I just love the way this woman is wrestling with a very learned philosophical idea and religious idea in the quiet of this room, a room she had only recently ever even had. She'd never had a room of her own before. Really just wrestling with the challenge of that idea.
You mentioned that you put off writing this book, but it was a book your mother always wanted you to write.
I really only finally completely committed to finishing the book when I realized my parents were dying, and that I suddenly, especially after my father died at the beginning of January 2012, I had this incredible sense of urgency. I must finish the book. And I didn't manage to finish it before my mother died. She died later that same year. But I do like to think that the story that I had to tell is like maybe not as crazy and outsized as this giant granite obelisk we're sitting next to here, a monument to Benjamin Franklin, who is not buried here, but some much smaller, quieter monument to my mother and the life that she led.
Well, you even write that you're placing the book as if placing a stone on their grave.
Yes, which is an allusion to the inscription that Franklin wrote. Franklin, who did not attend either his parents in their dying illnesses, Jane took care of them. Franklin, who did not come to their burial, Jane buried them. He paid for a stone to be placed over their grave. And I think about what that must have meant to Jane to come here and mourn them. She who lived with her parents almost her whole life, raised her children in their house, to visit a monument placed by her brother who had run away at the age of 17 and almost never, ever come home.
Historian Jill Lepore. Her Book of Ages, The Life and Opinions of Jane Franklin, came out in paperback this week. She spoke with Here Now's Alex Ashlock. Here Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young. Jeremy Hobson will be back on Monday. As my friend Beverly says, this is a sacred day, people. Hope you're enjoying it.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the Institute of Contemporary Art with Jim Hodges. The show features mirror mosaics, walls of flowers, and denim tapestry, now on view, ICABoston.org.